So one thing that is very new is we're seeing companies as they're filing their 10Ks referring to recent executive orders in the risk factors.
Hello and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the only platform to bring financial reporting, sustainability, audit, and risk teams together so you can deliver assured integrated reporting. It's when you bring financial and non-financial data together so it's ready for assurance. Just like when you combine green on a t-shirt, right in time for your St. Paddy's Day party, and you can assuredly have a good time. My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado, looking forward to debuting a great conversation, and I'm so happy to have you with us. Catherine, you're also joining us today. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Catherine Tsai, professional asker of questions, and I like to drink venti soy chais. And Steve, why don't you tell us what waves we're surfing today?
Well, we are just wrapping up earnings season and thought it'd be a great idea to catch up with our friend Nick Mazing, Director of Research at AlphaSense.
That's right. Nick joined us to break down all the things, including tariffs, inflation, Gen AI, and even eggs. So let's give it a listen.
Well, welcome, Nick Mazing, Director of Research at AlphaSense. And I don't know, this is a baker's dozen, Nick, how many times we've had you on, but we are delighted to have you back. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I think it's 15th time. So certainly a repeat offender.
It's a nice round number. We wanted to have you back to ask you about highlights that you've been seeing from recent filings. So what are you seeing, Nick?
We're seeing a lot. So obviously there is a, you know, if you probably know, there was an election that led to certain changes. So one thing that is very new is we're seeing companies as they're filing their 10Ks referring to recent executive orders in the risk factors, which is relatively unusual, almost like a subsequent event type of situation, since in some cases their business is affected by one or more EOs that, you know, there's 200 of them in the last few weeks. So that's you know, something that is definitely very new and different with the 10Ks that we're seeing coming in early in the year.
How about with generative AI? Are people talking about that?
Yes. What is interesting is we're actually in one of the major newspapers with a, rather than looking only at generative AI in terms of mentions on transcripts that mention the term, we're looking actually at generative AI adoption, and that is at all-time high. I think we're getting to the stage where we're seeing companies discussing adoption a little bit more thoroughly, as they have, you know, depending on, you know, the size of the corporations with the business they're in, et cetera, they're looking at, you know, build versus buy, obviously, and they're looking at implementing those tools. And, you know, there is obviously read-throughs across that. We can all agree it's a very big thing. And as examples, we have seen, let's say, utilities companies talking about data center supplies and long-term power agreements. We're seeing a lot more conversations around nuclear. And basically, the read-through of the entire chain is there. And it was interesting, you know, since talking about generative AI, if you remember when the Chinese model came out, NVIDIA, the stock dropped 17%. There were two utility companies that actually dropped more than that. One was at around 20%, one was at around 30%, because they were big players in the data center space. And when you look at how they've discussed data centers, they never discussed data centers until 2023. And now all of a sudden you're seeing this volatility in their business related to that, or I should say volatility in the stock price, obviously, since they're regulated utilities, which is certainly very, very new to, you know, nobody knew that was coming. And I think you're also seeing, you know, again, related to Gen AI, you're seeing some, you know, net zero targets being pushed out because of the supply picture for electricity and how hungry the whole process is for power.
One slight twist on the Gen AI question, Nick, is that we see more and more people talking actively about the way that Gen AI is being used to consume companies' earnings releases and press releases. Obviously, AlphaSense is very familiar with that, and I'd say at the leading edge. Is it safe to say that if you're producing a press release or an earnings release or anything in that regard, you really do need to be optimizing that for Gen AI consumption and not just the typical human reader that probably isn't reading it? They're probably using Gen AI to read it for them.
Absolutely. All of our hedge fund users are using multiple Gen AI tools, including some that are off the shelf. They use us for that sort of analysis. And it could be anything from, imagine what is the most negative analyst question on this call. or which topics generated multiple questions. That is pretty standard sort of Gen AI use case to things like risk factor summarization. And you know, I completely agree with your supposition that people who prepare financial reporting, people who do the prepared remarks on calls should be cognizant that this is going through generative AI tools.
What are some other hot topics that you're picking up with your tools?
We are seeing tariffs. They're back and they change by the hour, which is obviously difficult for reporting personnel. It's also difficult for executives to obviously plan that. And it's one of those typical situations we're already familiar with, you know, the market moving with a tweet. There is a chart from JP Morgan that looks at essentially, it looks at the U.S. exports, the average tariff by major trading partner, and then look at the U.S. imports by the trading partner. And in fact, across the board, the average tariffs on our exports are higher than the tariffs on the imports, right? Which is why you're seeing this push for reciprocal tariffs. It's like the visual is really stunning. However, how is this implemented, right? You have decades of, you know, basically NAFTA supply chain integrations, et cetera, and that is making it extremely difficult, I think, for people, you know, business plan perspective, disclosure perspective, I think.
It's been interesting to see the impact on capital markets with that in particular. You know, I think we all thought that was going to come roaring back. We were kind of expecting it, and it certainly isn't cut off completely. But I do think some of that uncertainty is maybe causing people to take a step back and kind of wait and see.
Yeah, there is a, you know, if you look at, you know, speaking of uncertainty, like couple of other topics are M&A. So M&A enforcement was pretty tight for a number of years. And, you know, so, you know, household names like that, you know, Kroger and Albertsons, right, that merger fell apart, or Tapestry, which is the parent company of Kate Spade and Coach. They were acquiring Kors, which is the parent company of Versace, Jimmy Choo and Michael Kors, and that didn't go through. The day after Election Day, the boutique M&A banks, not the big, I mean, they also went up, but the boutique M&A banks were up 10-15% because people were expecting that M&A is going to be back to normal. And on the day of the recording, there is a word out, there is a news report that they're looking to keep actually a lot of those more restrictive guidelines on M&A. Or if you look at labor, what happened with labor is you had a large influx of foreign nationals, and in a very American way, we trust you if you claim asylum. And while your case is pending, you actually get work authorization. Like the public space debate, I think, is nowhere nearly as nuanced because there is various types of, you know, oh, it's illegals. Well, no, they're actually authorized to work in the country. You had an increased labor force, right? There is also special temporary protected status for people from certain countries because things there, let's say Haiti, you know, they've had the earthquake, the country's, you know, anybody from Haiti is not illegal because they have the TPS. Venezuela, until recently, had TPS. Historically, let's say in the 90s, Bosnia had, during the war, had a temporary protected status. Anybody from that country can have work papers, etc. This is getting turned upside down, right? And for companies where traditionally either hire from those labor pools or hire from adjacent labor pools, right? So not only do you have the tariff uncertainty, let's say if you're a home builder or something like that, you also have the serious labor uncertainty regarding it, because again, you have had multiple ways of authorization for these sort of people doing work while their cases are pending and so on. I think people underestimated the uncertainty that is actually happening after the election across how quickly, you know, the tweets are coming regarding tariffs or the labor situation, or the overall the regulatory situation that is in place.
Let's talk a little bit about inflation too. What are you seeing in the filings on that topic?
So I'm a big fan of using SEC filings for inflation tracking. Without nerding out too much, the government doesn't think that house prices going up is inflation, because they don't input housing prices into the index. It is survey based off of essentially a panel of owners, and they're asking how much do you think you can rent your house for, just simplistically speaking. And there is, honestly, we have actually very high fidelity data on public apartment REITs, and you can see what's going on with their rents in real time. And if you were actually wrote a piece in the Financial Times 2 years ago regarding that, because it was in the inflation was in the double digits, and it wasn't in the CPI, it came into CPI later, right? So inflation has been high. We're in a high inflationary regime. We have been above, you know, basically 3% and above for basically 5 years. And the fact that, you know, the initial claim was it's transitory, it's not transitory, right? It is above the 2% target. Some people would argue that the 2% target is not even legitimate. It should be 0% if the target is price, if the actual mandate is price stability. And, you know, there is like laws from the 1980s that people had reviewed, et cetera. So inflation is high. And so housing, which is the largest component, I don't think is measured appropriately. And you can like literally pick any apartment REIT and you can see, you know, across tens of thousands of units nationally, what is happening with housing costs. Healthcare inflation is another one, which is also a big component in, you know how much you pay. You probably just got your tax form that where it's listed as a kind of an exempt income sort of situation. Simplistically speaking, if you read the methodology, it's not based off of actual premium that you're paying or you and your employer are paying together, right? Car insurance, that's been going up. You can, you know, Progressive is actually a monthly. They report monthly numbers and you can see what they say about, you know, the average premium. Cars, CarMax and Carvana, they mention average unit price. And you can go back and you can see exactly what happened because this is the market. They're so big that literally in the SEC findings, you can create your own inflation index basically from extremely highly reliable data that you can track over time, right? And my favorite one is Cal Maine Foods, the largest egg producer, publishes prices by the dozen. And obviously, since everybody has been worried about eggflation, EGGflation, right? You can actually see it in their filings because obviously with bird flu, there was a lot of culling and as a result, egg prices have continued to go up, and they publish their realized wholesale prices, you know, regular eggs and specialty eggs. So in case, I don't know, maybe Steve makes quail egg omelets every Sunday. I don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. You can actually track that over the years and, in fact, see the real data rather than wait for a release that maybe 2 months old or something like that. So SEC filings are really, really, really good for many things, including creating your own custom inflation indexes.
I love that you love SEC filings so much, Nick. It brings joy to my heart.
The Workiva platform delivered 204% ROI. The benefits of uniting financial reporting, ESG, and audit and risk management all in one platform add up. Go to workiva.com/TEI to see how. That's workiva.com/TEI. Workiva, where your most important financial, sustainability, audit and risk reporting work comes together.
So there's been a lot of talk about the term ESG and sustainability. New research that we recently published at Workiva tells us that regardless of those changes, companies are still moving forward with those initiatives and some type of reporting. But I'm curious, what is that looking like relative to earnings releases and everything we're seeing so far in the quarter?
So I think the kind of, you know, I try to, at least to myself, to explain things in terms of, you know, macro what is happening, right? And there is a when you look at history, there is one analogy that I remember my former CIA guy, history teacher in high school, was saying that history moves like a pendulum. And what happened for X number of years, you had the pendulum swinging, let's call it to the left. You know, we can argue, right, in terms of is it really left or not. And now what you're observing, and this applies to not just to ESG reporting, to really any regulatory sort of efforts or existing systems, it's swinging the other way really fast. Would companies still report ESG? Would still they have ESG? Yes. Would they have to report, like, even if, let's say, climate disclosure or things like this get pushed out, they're probably going to come back in 4 years, right? You might as well be ready and report, in my opinion, right? Because in general, there is kind of the long-term march is towards more disclosure regarding emissions, regarding, you know, if you look at your typical ESG report, labor force turnover, water targets, etc. And a lot of this is good business, right? Obviously, you want. So, yes, there is a pullback. However, I really don't see how 5 years down the road there will be fewer requirements rather than what we have now or more.
What about the term ESG? Are people still using that term?
Very rarely. Whether it's, you know, shareholder proposals, whether it's, which are getting harder again to, you know, they just happened, right, with the upcoming proxy season. On calls, almost, you know, anything ESG related, net zero, et cetera, they have been declining for a while anyway, when you look at transcripts. And now it has become, you know, let's say, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, it was like, oh, how can you not have an ESG problem or something like that? And now it's not only a headline risk. If you look at what happened with that one retailer that had promotions around Pride Month and things like that, they're being sued for not warning the shareholders that there may be a backlash. Or if you look at that alcoholic beverage company that had one campaign that wasn't even a campaign, right? And yet they got boycotted, and that was the number one brand in that category, dropped to like number 3 or 4. Right, so you're the largest brand in the largest profit pool in the world in that beverage category, and you drop to like number 4 or something like that. Right, so navigating the culture wars was extremely tricky, especially for visible consumer brands, because like you have to serve everybody. Let's put it this way, right? Like you cannot make exclusionary claims regarding your product, which means you have to be in various channels, which now includes influencers, et cetera, right? So should it be held against you that you're using a certain personality for things like that? I don't know. I don't think you can make that blanket statement, right? And it makes it just harder to run your business because some influencer on Twitter, now X, on either side can, you know, freak out and organize a boycott or something like that. Or my favorites, people, you know, control, I think, proxy statements on Edgar and saying, ooh, they said X. It's like you're missing so much context that where do we even begin, right? But it's stupid, but it's the reality.
Well, going back to the comment you made in the beginning about people mentioning executive orders and their risk factors, that strikes me as a little unusual.
It's highly unusual.
What is not unusual is the succinct and witty insights that we get from you, Nick, every time we have you back on the podcast. Fascinating wrap-up. Anything else you want to share with us?
For any chocolate lovers, there is a Pennsylvania-based chocolate maker that just filed their 10K, and you can review their mark-to-market gains on their derivatives positions in cocoa.
Well, Nick Mazing, Director of Research at AlphaSense, thank you again, as always, for joining us. It was great to have you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you again to Nick Mazing for joining us for, I don't know, like the 25th time. I'm not sure what the number is. But, Catherine, we were just talking about inflation with Nick. What would you put on your own personal inflation index?
The price of a venti soy chai.
Obviously. Well, I was just going to say the price of a Diet Coke, but then knowing that that wasn't going to be good enough, I would say the price of the fajitas that I have 3 times a week at Gualberto's, which is my favorite place to eat, just down the street from my house.
Are they holding the price steady?
You know what? Actually, as much as I can tell, they are. I'll be honest with you, I don't really look at the price, and now this is a reminder that maybe I should.
Ah, well, there you go. Well, thanks, Steve, for being with us, and thanks also to our guest, Nick Mazing. And thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Catherine. You heard Steve Soder. This has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva.
Yeah, that's right. And this is actually going to be one of the last episodes that you'll hear of Off the Books, presented by Workiva, because we are cooking up something brand new, and we are so excited to share it with you coming up here in the future. In the meantime, surf's up, and we will see you on the next wave.